WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Teachers and kids, I'm giving you a preview of today's program. It's an interview that I recorded almost a year ago with Steve Glasecki, a young poet from Springfield, and he tells about when he was 9 or 10 working with Elizabeth Graham at the Vachel Lindsay House on poetry as a spoken art. Then he recites his own poem, Fairies in a Frenzy. He got the idea for this poem seeing Spanish moss hanging from oak trees and imagining that fairies in a real hurry had snagged their hair on the branches. Why were they in a hurry? Well, maybe because of the goblin in the ditch. This is a 9-minute poem, and I don't want to cut it. So be prepared to listen as if to a piece of music. Don't worry if you don't get all the words. Steve goes back and forth from the fairies to the goblin in his chanting and singing, and you'll get that change of voice. Put your head on your desk during the poem and shut your eyes and let yourself be hypnotized by Steve's rhythmic voice. If you go to sleep, that's okay. It will be very like listening to Vachel Lindsay, and that's one reason I want you to have the experience. You younger classes may want to turn the radio off after the poem. If so, your writing suggestions are to write a poem, several lines long at least, on any subject, but to try front rhyme. That's having several words in each line start with the same letter. For instance, listen for the F's in this line of Steve's. Fairies in a frenzy fling through the trees. Or here, listen for the M's. In the swirling clouds of moon glow mist, madcap fairies whirl and twist. That front rhyme is called alliteration. Try also for a strong beat, a strong rhythm, as you hear Steve do. And don't be afraid of repetition, saying things over and over. Steve does that, too. So, a poem, front rhyme, strong beat, repetition. For those of you that listen beyond the poem, you will hear us discussing alliteration and other aspects of poetry, and Steve, who is a medievalist, will explain what a medievalist is and will recite some Old English and Middle English. If you've never heard it, you're in for a surprise. What our language sounded like 600 years ago. So end of preview, start of interview. No, but our listeners are just beginning to know that you were a kid here in Springfield and that you knew Elizabeth Graham. Do you want to tell us a little more about that?
I spent the first 18 years of my life in Springfield. My mother taught at Springfield High School.
Latin, by the way.
Taught Latin and a little English, too. And it was Miss Graham who, I think, twisted her arm to get her to teach at Springfield High. And then my mom had a fairly long career there. But I met Miss Graham, well, I don't remember the first time. When I was very little, I'm sure. And she was always, as I grew older, trying to get me to recite a new poem at the Illinois State Fair or for her or for friends or wherever. And we'd work on poems right here in this dining room.
Well, tell us what sort of a teacher, what sort of a poem master was she for teaching
well,
you your poetry?
I never had her formally as a teacher at Springfield High since I went to Griffin. But she was always a guest at our house for Christmas and other holidays when I was home. As a teacher, I think that what Miss Graham passed on to me was probably Vachel Lindsay's style of reading poetry, or based on Lindsay's style, I'm sure. Repetition, song, really using the voice to do everything one possibly could. She believed the human voice was an instrument that could be varied in many, many different ways. I can remember her saying, but you just don't know all the things a voice can do. And she tried to convince me that it could do all these infinite numbers of different things.
Do you think that much of your interest in poetry probably came from Elizabeth's influence and the Lindsay influence?
Hers and my mother's, because my mother, too, has always been real interested in English and American mm-hmm. literature. But there was something kind of mystical about Miss Graham, I think, to me anyway. Mm-hmm. And she certainly got me aware of poetry as a spoken art, not just something we read on a page, but a real living oral art form, something that should be performed the way music is performed. And that's the way she taught me. She was practically a choreographer of the voice, and she'd have me do the poems not once or twice or three or four times, but 10 times, a dozen times.
Mm-hmm. Now, today you told the group a story when you read your elegy for Elizabeth about mm-hmm. a time that she was training you for a poem at the State Fair.
Right.
Do you want to tell us that again, or should we get the sheet and have you read it as you wrote it?
We don't need to read it. I think I can recall some of the details. The title of that poem has escaped me, but it was from the Spoon River Anthology, and it was about a ill-fated hunter who met his end while hunting quail in the tangles of the Spoon River, Amequansippi, Indians called it. And the fellow reached to get the dead quail that he'd shot down out of the sky, and as he reached, a rattlesnake struck. And that was the end of his days. Well, that was also the end of the poem, and at the conclusion of that poem, Miss Graham had me fall down on the floor very heavily and dramatically. This poem was to be recited at the Illinois State Fair. I was 9 or 10 years old at the time, I think. And it was August when we were practicing that poem, and she'd fit me out in a full hunter's uniform, all wool, wool coat, heavy coveralls, heavy boots, wool cap, and she had me holding this ancient percussion cap shotgun, a beautiful old piece. I can remember it really well, and I'm sure that she wheedled it away from some benefactor who probably wasn't all that happy to bestow it and was a little worried about it, so Miss Graham conveyed his worry to me. She made sure that I treated that gun as gently as I could. When I fell on the floor, I was supposed to cushion that gun and make sure nothing happened to it. If the stock were broken or chipped, I'm sure that it
no worry about what was happening to little Steve.
Well, little Steve had plenty of cushion on him at that time, as he usually has in his life, so. She even had me fall on the floor and recite the last four lines of that poem from a prone position several times to see how that worked. But, well, that was one of many poems that she had to work on.
In your paper today, you said how she had you dressed all up in mm-hmm. very hot, hunter's outfit. And as he told it to the people here, he said, "I winged my bird again and again and again and again until I had winged it to Miss Graham's satisfaction here in the Lindsay home, and that she was sure I could wing it properly
at the state fair. And then after we'd winged it 100 times, we began working on line 2.
And that brought a big laugh from everybody.
And everyone knows that state fair always comes at the hottest part of the summer here.
But those of us that know Elizabeth, too, knows that she demanded perfection. And so that when you came to line 2, and we thought you'd been working on the whole poem all afternoon, and it was just line 1. Well, now, I want to give the kids a sample of your work, and the sample I want to give them is the Fairies in a Frenzy poem.
Fine.
And rather than to make you recite that all over again now that the big moment is over, what I'm going to do is stop the tape right here, and then our friend and producer Brad Swanson will dub in what you read just an hour ago.
Fairies in a frenzy fling through the trees, fairies in a frenzy where no one sees. In the midnight wood where the grapevines twine, in the deep night wood where the creepers wind through the outflung arms of the oaks of old. Lob lolly fairies ride the moonbeams cold, lob lolly fairies in their legions untold. Through the rough-skinned limbs of the old live oaks, gossamer wings make luminous strokes, leaving tracks and traces round the glowing eyes of the tiny faces, round the knowing eyes of the fairy faces. Spider web wings beat the moonlight air in the midnight wood near the goblin lair. In the deep dark wood through the rough barked oaks with rainbow wings rides the fairy host. In circles and rings rides the fairy host. Through the snatching claws of the stretching oaks, through the fingers and the jaws of the lingering oaks, in circles and rings rolls the fairy host. In circles and rings flows the fairy host. Under bright night skies on the quick silver air, fairies ride moonbeams with gray-green hair. Fairies stride moonbeams with streaming hair, blown back behind them on the quick silver air, thrown back behind them under moonspun skies. Glowing green hair follows knowing green eyes that can peer clear through you and count your lies. In the midnight wood where the creep burrs twine through the chambered roots of the riven oak, fairies fly in flitches in hosts and legions, while goblins lurk in ditches over nether regions where no light goes, where nothing grows. Goblins lurk in ditches and no one knows. Fairies in a frenzy fling through the trees, while goblins grub in ditches and hug their knees and mumble their toes. Goblins grin in ditches where no one goes. Fairies ride the night wind light as thistle down. Fairies ride the night wind far from any town. Goblins lurk in ditches, gnawing on their nails, peering through dead branches down the empty trails, waiting for their chances, crushing little snails. In the midnight wood, in their legions and their hosts, fairies ride the night wind, crying like ghosts, sighing like fetches. Fairies on the night wind flinging in flitches, wailing like the banshees. Fairies in their best dress zinging through the trees. Fairies with their wings pressed singing through the trees, with their silver green hair lighting on the leaves in the midnight wood where no one sees, where no one hears, by the deep rat ditch where the goblin leers, by the reeking rat ditch where the goblin sneers and sucks his paws, the old curmudgeon, and clacks his jaws as he strokes his bludgeon. In the thin white light of the fat full moon, fairies in the forest yodel and croon and make a magic tune on their cobweb strumming, playing long straw flutes while their wings keep humming. Meanwhile the goblin lurks in his den or tends his trees in a secret glen, prunes his trees and picks their fruit. The bane of men is the goblin fruit. Pain for men grows with goblin fruit. Fairies in a frenzy fling through the air. Fairies in a flurry with blown back hair. Fairies in a hurry with gray-green hair. Blown out behind them on the starlit air. Their float. Hair thrown out behind them on the quick silver air, the fairy hair in moon spun clouds on the midnight air. beneath the writhing roots of the riven oak in his weed-choked bowers, the goblin cowers and grins to himself as he kills little flowers, sins by himself through the midnight hours, grins to himself as his fresh fruit sours. The moon-struck fairies in the dim starlight fling in a frenzy till the dawn's first light. Blown back behind them floats their moss-green fleece, their long green hair in loops and swirls on the lightening air. As the dawn comes on, each mad fairy spins and twirls, twirls and spins by the deep roach ditch where the goblin grins. Fairies in a flurry fling through the trees, fairies in a hurry string through the trees till the first gleam of dawn, and then in a twinkling the legions are gone as the dew comes sprinkling, the hosts all gone at dawn's first inkling. In the broad daylight by the live oak wood, when all is bright, when all is clear, something will tell you the fairies flew here. Something will tell you fairies flew here. In the morning light, everyone sees fairy hair on the live oak trees. Fairy hair on the live oak trees. Trees, when all is bright, when all is clear, hung from the trees is the fairy hair, flung through the trees floats the fairy hair, soft as the dew on the morning air, hung from the trees is the fairy hair. In gray-green clouds, in silver-green mists, in the arms of oaks, in feathery twists.
It's a very good example, Steve, of what you mean by coming off the page and being performed rather than just read as so many wooden words, because you really sang out on that poem, and the changes in your voice when you were the goblin and when you were the frenetic fairies, and so forth. I felt a great kinship there with Vachel Lindsay, who also sang and chanted his poems.
I'm flattered to be mentioned.
And also with Dylan Thomas, who also chanted and sang his poems and was a great dramatic presenter of his poems.
And Thomas, too, and for Lindsay as well, I think in some of his poems the sound becomes much more important than the meaning in the poem, and the sound is meant to get hypnotic. And in that poem too, the sound and the repetitions, they're obviously more important than the meaning.
Now, the purpose of Reading and Writing and Radio, why I'm allowed to put it on week after week during the school year, is to encourage kids to write. And one thing I've been encouraging to write is poetry. Now, I think that the kind of writing the kids do, they're usually a lot better at the prose writing than they are at the poetry. And I wanted to ask you a few things about writing poetry that might help kids to write better poetry than they write. For instance, as I was thinking about your poem last night, and I'd heard it twice before I heard it again this afternoon, I was thinking, fairies in a frenzy fling through the trees. And all of a sudden I thought, Beowulf. what we haven't told you is that Steve has finished his college and his graduate school and has his first job, and he's teaching English at Birmingham, University of Alabama at Birmingham, and Steve is a medievalist. Would you mind telling these kids what a medievalist is?
A medievalist.
In English lit?
Well, that means that you learn about the good old stuff that not that many people get a chance to read anymore. To me, it's a privilege to be able to teach it, but you need to...
Well, what is medieval stuff?
These medieval, kids? Well, medieval means the middle, so
medieval times as the space in between, and that's the space in between the fall of the Roman Empire in the 5th century A.D. and the Renaissance, which we think of as the Italian Renaissance, say, 14th century. So you have about 1,000 years there from, say, 500 A.D. to, 1400 A.D., where
all the stuff that was written in there.
Mm-hmm. And there's a huge variety, a wide range.
Does English that include Chaucer on the upper end or not?
That would, say, begin with Beowulf and end with Malory. Malory goes about 100 years beyond Chaucer. He's considered Middle English,
and
too.
He was the basis of the Arthurian stories.
Right. He pulled together from many different sources the Arthurian mm-hmm. legend.
Now, when I studied Beowulf in school, we were told that it was poetry, but it was poetry that didn't rhyme, but that it's
not
particular... what?
Well, oh, pardon me.
Well, but that it's particular... I don't know the word.
Uh-huh.
But the words started with the same letters. There'd be three, okay. So you have F's there. Flowers... Why do I keep saying flowers? Fairies in a frenzy fling
flowers
through the
and
trees.
Go together, really.
So that we've got all those F's there. And then there would be other lines where you had this sort of thing. And I wondered if you were being deliberately Beowulfian in this kind of poetry.
Not in this poem, but in some poems are much more deliberately try to reproduce that Anglo-Saxon meter. And I'm sorry I started to pounce on you there a minute ago, Jack.
Because Beowulf does rhyme?
I consider alliteration front rhyme, really. It's the sounds...
Okay, now you're using some words that kids probably don't know. Alliteration. Okay.
Alliteration, simply repeating the same consonant sound. So
that
fairies in a frenzy fling through the trees. Well, those F sounds that are repeated, that's alliteration, and it's just front rhyme. The rhyme comes at the beginning of the word instead of the end of the word.
Okay,
in the
okay.
old days, that's how English worked. Old English poetry is based upon that type of rhyme. Oft he man haga, are ye bide. Martyr is middle, there he mode cherry, yond lagulade, long ye sharda. You see,
now
you
is that
heavily.
Is that English?
That's English, all right.
Kids, that's English.
That's Anglo-Saxon English. That's the earliest. That's the sort of language that the Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes, the Frisians, and whoever brought with them from the continent when they settled England in the 500-600s.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes a lot into Middle English, which sounds very different from Old English.
Can you give us a sample of Middle English?
Sure, let me see. Some Chaucer from the Knight's Tale. The gratitude that was so thick and strong, which of the castle was the chief dungeon, of which he told the yeo, on telling Charles, was even joinant unto the garden wall, whereas this Emilia had her playing. Bright was the sun, and clear that morning, when Palamon, this woeful prisoner, as was his wont, belave of his galere, was risen and rummed in a chamber on high.
I guess that's enough, although it's fascinating.
I keep rolling on, but
yeah.
You can really see a difference in the Old mm-hmm. English and the Middle English. Middle English comes closer to our own.
When did you become interested in this style of English? Why aren't you a modernist?
I don't know. Some people tell me I was born in the wrong century.
That's what C.S. Lewis said, too.
I love the culture. I've always, I suppose, liked knights and armor and all the trappings of medieval culture, and had several teachers along the way who encouraged me in that direction. That's been the most influential thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I think we should wind up by making some suggestions to the kids for the sorts of things that they might write. And I thought they might like to have some fun trying this front rhyme or alliteration.
Sure.
And seeing if you can write something, any particular subjects? Should they be grand or...
Oh, I don't think so. I think to write a poem, you need to be able to just open your mind up to what impressions come crowding in. And if you try to use the front rhyme a little, you might find that it's like tacks. It'll help hold your lines together. Every time that word is repeated, or that sound, that initial sound is repeated, it makes sort of an echoing effect. It can really lend unity, help interlock lines. But grand subjects, it's hard to say. Poetry lends itself to every subject.
To every subject, okay. So we'll suggest any subject, but try... Try alliteration. Try making several words, 3-4 words in a line begin with the same letter.
But don't put them all right next to each other. Let a few words come in between. Otherwise, it'll be too jolty up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go softly. Use alliteration with care.
And then you might try some of the repetition, like Steve did in his Fairies in a Frenzy, because he will vary a line. It'll be almost like the line before, but it'll be a little bit different. But you get that kind of rhythm and repetition
and if it works,
that carries
haunting.
You along.
Yeah, if it works, they'll haunt you, those lines.
And if you don't want to write poetry, then you might try something like, here is Steve, who was associated with Elizabeth Graham, this great woman that we all have loved and revered. Perhaps you have somebody that you'd like to write about with special stories. Or you might have a dramatic event in your past, like learning that poem that Steve learned where he had to end up falling down and delivering his lines from the floor.
All our lives are full of things like that. If you just remember things that are important to you, well, show people why they're important and you'll have a good piece of writing.
And put them in either poetry or prose, whichever seems to fit, right, Steve?
I would say so, and there are times when prose is poetry too, it seems. Can be. Some of the sentences that you work really hard on. Alliteration can work too in prose, but there it has to be used extremely discreetly. You don't even want your reader to know it's there. But, sure, write prose poems or write poems in the conventional lines. Let your poems rhyme or not rhyme, however.
They can be very free.
Mm-hmm. Or extremely structured. You can't rule out, I don't think you can rule out any of the possibilities that our language has. And English has many, many different possibilities. With all the traditions, it's picked up like a big snowball rolling down from those old English times.
Well, I do thank you for taking time after your poetry reading to give us a radio show.
Well,
and
this is
I'll send you some of the results.
Thank you.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.